digitally uploaded.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Digitally Uploaded episode whatever we're up to. I'm Matthew Sainsbury. I'm the editor-in-chief of digitallydownloaded.com, .net, actually. Don't go to .com. And with me today, I've got Chris.
How's it going?
And Alan.
Hey, guys.
Great. Let's jump straight into it. Welcome back, and that was a track from Knights of Azure, which, if you've seen my review, I absolutely loved every moment of it. Okay, so we've had quite a lot of news come through this week. Final Fantasy XV's big announcement reveal, spoiled by GameSpot trailer thingy, is obviously at the top of that. We're going to spend a full segment talking about that, but we've got some other smaller bits of news to talk about first. The first one is Code of Princess, which not everybody out there might be too aware of, but it was one of the first kind of eShop download on the 3DS exclusive games that kind of drew a bit of attention for being a good game. That's coming to PC, and I know Chris is very excited for that one.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Code of Princess is a really, really fun game, and actually back in the day, when the 3DS was still quite young and people were kind of unconvinced on the system, me being one of them, Code of Princess was the game. It was the nail in the coffin that finally got me to invest in the 3DS hardware. It's just fantastic, and for those of you with old school roots that run deep enough into the 32-bit era, it's important to understand Code of Princess as a spiritual successor to the Treasure's Legendary Guardian Heroes on the Saturn. It basically plays the same way. It's a heck of a great game, and it's going to be a lot of fun to have it on the PC with online multiplayer.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't too sold, I guess, on it on the 3DS itself. I like the concept of the game, but I felt the technical limitations of the 3DS made it all just a little bit too difficult to get along with. I think on the PC that's going to resolve most of those issues, if not all of them, and that'll let me enjoy the game on a thematic level as well this time around, because it is actually quite an interesting game. It's quite subversive in a lot of places. It's sure. It makes such good use of the chainmail bikini kind of trope to turn it on its head and kind of poke fun of that sister that trope that we've had going around for so many years now. It's going to be a good one, I think, on the PC.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the trailer right now, and it looks a lot like the old Dungeons and Dragons beat 'em ups, like a lot like that, which is awesome because those games are radical.
Yeah, it probably sits a little bit more heavily on the RPG side of things than the beat-em-up side of things. From memory, it's been quite a few years since I played it now. But it's certainly in that vein, and anybody who has played the old Dungeons & Dragons arcade games will get along with this just fine, I think.
Actually, if anything, it's closer to a fighting game than anything, because unlike the old beat-em-ups, it's not what we call a belt scroller beat-em-up. You don't have that up and down movement across a semi-3D or isometric plane. The characters all function on a two-dimensional plane, and you can shift two-dimensional planes almost like layers. So the characters and the kinetic movement actually function even closer to a fighting game than anything, and then you can kind of alternate between layers. So it's something very different from a traditional beat-em-up. It's really unique.
And with a great sense of humor.
And a fantastic soundtrack, really good voice acting. It's a great package, and like you mentioned, it'll be exciting to see it freed from the technological confines of what the 3DS was and was not capable of.
Yep, absolutely. Moving along, just this morning for Australians, I don't know, whatever time, wherever else you are in the world, but there was an announcement from Koei Tecmo that Romance of the Three Kingdoms is finally coming back to English-speaking countries. I guess Nobunaga's Ambition, which they localized last year, turned out to be enough of a commercial success to take the Three Kingdoms era strategy game series that they've got and give it another shot. It's coming to PC and PS4, and it's going to be pretty great, I think. If you want to get a taste for what the Romance of the Three Kingdoms series is, there is an iPad iOS game from a couple of years ago, as well as a virtual console port on the Wii U of the Super Nintendo one. It's obviously a very long lasting series, and it's going to be deep, strategic, challenging, and pretty much everything I like to see in my strategy games. So that's worth looking forward to.
Yeah, I mean, those are the sort of games that I've never really sort of taken a look at properly, but I really should, because it sounds like everything I sort of want from a strategy game. And yeah, because I've never really seen Australian stores, which is upsetting.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very niche series. People point to Civilization as being a complex game, but really Civilization has got absolutely nothing on what these kind of games do. They're, you know, you kind of need to approach them with actual military strategy to kind of get ahead in the more difficult settings of them. So yeah, need to commit some real time to them as well. They can pretty much bust an entire holiday if you let them. Okay, the other bit of news is probably more for me than Alan and Chris, but I'm going to say it anyway because I can. Hatsune Miku has been confirmed. This is Project Diva X, has been confirmed for release in English on PlayStation 4 and PlayStation Vita. We weren't quite sure if that was going to happen. The game was kind of released in Japan without any confirmation until a day or two ago. So Hatsune Miku fans get to enjoy that. The more Hatsune Miku, the better. See, as I said, Chris and Alan didn't have much to say about that one. So we'll go to a break and come back with a proper chat about Final Fantasy XV. We'll be right back. Welcome back. So let's talk about Final Fantasy XV, given that that's going to be the biggest JRPG released this year, this decade, this century, depending on how much of a fan you still are of the series. We'll give an overview of what we thought of the overall show, because it ran for about an hour, and aside from the hosts, who were terrible and a pretty good reason never to hire YouTube hosts to do a stage show, the rest of it was pretty damn good. Chris?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of us have been waiting for more and more concrete information on FF15. Not that we haven't been getting a slow trickle over the past year or so since Episode Duske was playable, but I think Square kind of stepped up to the plate with the event this week and kind of gave us something to be excited for and kind of rewarded us with, rewarded our good faith by showing us a lot of stuff. We had some beautiful new trailer reveals. For those of you who didn't watch, the way the entire reveal event was set up was with 15 new information snippets to coincide with it being FF15. Some were unexpected, some were fully expected. There's not only a multi-episode kind of prologue anime that's going to be a companion piece with the game, but also a full-length CG movie that will be a companion to the game that will focus more on Noctis's father, the king, which is awesome for me because I love dad narratives.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, though, I'm a bit worried because why is that stuff not in the game? It just seems like I don't know what's going to be actually in the game, and it's all going to be in these like weird, like, outside the game narrative things. I don't really want to have to go through the process of watching when I could just play the video game and get the full story there.
Well, I guess for me, I mean, looking at what the anime and the trailer for the full-length CG film are suggesting, it's going to be a whole lot of stuff that will be supplemental to the main plot of Final Fantasy XV, which looks like it's going to be an absolutely massive game already. It allows Square Enix to, I guess, expand on the world that they've spent 10 years in development, and kind of it's a way, I guess, of turning Final Fantasy XV into a multimedia franchise, which I think is a good idea. I think it's a good way to continue to build on the world, to set up opportunities for further content down the track, rather than have a self-contained game where if you're to do a sequel, then it looks a little bit forced, which I guess if I was to criticize the Final Fantasy XIII trilogy, that would be the criticism I had. After the first game, the other two two sequels started to look like they were a little bit latched on. I think the way that Square Enix is approaching this one by having it a multimedia property from the start immediately opens up the chance for them to keep coming back to the world as they need to make money from it. The other thing, I guess, is with regards to the CG film, at least, the father is being voiced by Sean Bean, and I would bet that
he's going to
die. So,
we're on the same page with that.
It was amazing. Like, when Sean Bean popped up on the screen, my Twitter stream just went absolutely ballistic with jokes about, Sean Bean dying.
I think we all knew the king was going to die anyway. Because when has an awesome bearded king survived any JRPG?
No.
Yeah.
I mean, it was pretty much confirmed he's going to die anyway, since right at the end of the last trailer or something, the squall dude put on the ring.
The squall dude?
Yeah. That's why I can't remember his name already, but
Noctis.
Yeah, that's the one, Noctis. He looks like a squall dude. So he put on the ring and said, "Thank you, father," or something rather. One assumes that means the father died and passed the ring on. So I think it's likely, very likely, that there's some father death in that CG film. So it makes sense to kind of put that as a separate entity to the game itself.
I guess. As long as it doesn't put that in the game as like a giant amount of like scroll of text like they did with 13, I'll be happy. I'm so sick of... No one read those. Who actually sat down and read those? They weren't
I did.
You read I them? Did.
And yeah, all the back, and all the back dictionaries, and all the definitions.
God! Oh,
To be fair, Alan, I mean, I'm the kind of guy that actually goes through and reads like every bit of the information that the Mass Effect series threw up at me. I read through every single book in the Skyrim game as well, the Elder Scrolls games, every book. I end up with this big library because I just keep collecting them and sticking them in my bookshelves in my home.
I was going to say,
you people exist.
You don't even like Mass Effect.
Well, should we move on to the demo then, maybe?
Well, yep, go ahead.
Yeah, so they also released a bit of a demo. It's more of a tech demo than an actual gameplay demo, I'd feel, but it does have a bit of gameplay in it. What I'd actually like to say is that they've basically taken Kingdom Hearts. It feels very much like Kingdom Hearts, and that's a good thing, honestly. It's a bit floaty at the moment. Like, it doesn't feel very weighted, but it's fun. Like, it feels all right. The soundtrack that's in the demo is incredible. I'm so excited to hear that. Like, it's already, like, in my head most of the time now. And the graphics are wonderful. There's a lot of style in that. Like, a lot of style in that. And just... It has a lot of potential, but I'm still very skeptical, of course. Because I'm not sure whether or not they'll keep the same excitement throughout the entire game, I guess. Although I will say Carbuncle is adorable and I want a plush. Hook me up, Square Enix. Hook me up so badly. I need one
Carbuncle's
of those.
Carbuncle's always been the best.
Yeah, but like, have you seen the fur like texture? It's so cool. It's so cute. I want one. So adorable. And he squeaks at you and he sends you like emojis. I want a Carbuncle that sends me emojis. I want that.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of had some combat aside, which I don't really want to go into a huge talk about, like, the design choices and what the combat means for me. I don't really agree with the Kingdom Hearts comparison, but that's a discussion for another time. I just really like your comment that it was more of a tech demo than anything. I think it's really fascinating that we have two FF15 demos to play, right? So we have the episode Duske, and we have this new Platinum demo. One's very much a tech demo and an introduction, and the other is very much a playable nugget closer to what we can expect of the final game. And I very much like the idea of contextualizing the Platinum demo as a tech demo. I was talking with a friend earlier about it, and one of the things that was really cool, we both had the same thought as we were driving around in the toy level. Looking at the blocks, we were thinking, oh, this area is gorgeous, but I'm sure those blocks are static, and sure enough, they were not. As soon as you hit them, they all started tumbling with physics. And that to me was a real cool sign of the type of environmental interaction that we might be able to expect in the full game. There's a lot of really interesting things to explore in the Platinum demo that you can kind of use to build expectations for what we can expect in the full game. It's a really neat piece of tech.
And I do want to just point out the lighting is gorgeous. It is so beautiful.
It's fascinating.
When you're sitting in the room, and you can change the light, and the chandeliers come on, and it's like, whoa, this is the future. Yeah, it's absolutely gorgeous.
I guess after 10 years of development, you kind of hope it'd look good.
don't say that. Duke Nukem Forever, remember?
Yeah, but this is Square Enix. This isn't just some shitty little studio that makes terrible games.
Wow. Right. Someone's a fan.
On that bomb, we'll go to a break and come back and talk some more about Final Fantasy XV. Welcome back. That was another track from Knights of Azure. Go play it. So, continuing to talk about Final Fantasy 15. I haven't actually played the demo, Platinum demo, as yet, so I didn't have too much to say then. But obviously I did watch the big reveal event, and one of the things I found most interesting, or actually the thing I found most interesting of all, was the use of Stand By Me as the soundtrack or the theme song for the game, because for me that clarified an awful lot about one of my main concerns about what I'd seen of Final Fantasy XV to date. So I like my Final Fantasy games to have female characters in them. Pretty much all my favorite female characters, through the Final Fantasy series have been women. So when I'd seen that Final Fantasy 15 was four guys doing their thing, I was a little bit concerned about the tone, whether I'd get along with the tone of the game. But then the Stand By Me soundtrack theme song came out on, and immediately I kind of understood where they were going for. So Stand By Me is an absolutely brilliant film, and it's a film that they absolutely adore in Japan. It's a story that they really get along with. It speaks to the Japanese speaks to the Japanese culture a lot as well, despite being an American film. And the song from that film has a very powerful relationship to the film, and when you start to stick it into a game, you're immediately building that association between the film and the game. So the film has four young guys kind of going through a growing, coming of age experience as they go on a little adventure together. So the link to Final Fantasy XV is obviously you've got four guys going on an adventure together. And to me, I kind of now know that it's going to be a coming of age story on some level. That's going to be, I hope Square Enix can do it justice, because it's a fairly difficult story to do well, but I have every faith in them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it sort of comes down to whether or not you want to sort of compare it entirely to the movie, because I'm not sure it'll be on the same sort of like childhood-esque exploration. It'll be more like sort of, because Noctis looks like he's not 16, he looks like Squall, like you said. So I'm assuming it's going to be like, oh, the world is so bad, and I hate everyone in it, and my name's Squall Noctis. Like, that sort of thing. I'm not excited about that. But I really do hope they put some effort in and actually have some, you know, quality writing in there and actual character development, because I've missed that, and I hate Lightning, so I want an actual character.
I just think it's interesting, too, you know, talking about Stand By Me and what associations we can make between Stand By Me and, you know, the journey we're going to see in FF15 is a lot of people forget that Stand By Me, the film, is based on a Stephen King novella called The Body. And, you know, as with all things with Stephen King, there's even when he's not writing horror, there's a certain element of the unknown, an element of menace. So that association to Stand By Me, for me, also gets the cogs of my brain working of, you know, what mysteries are going to be part of the journey as well.
Well, I think we saw a little bit of that with the role of the woman, Luna.
Sure.
Yeluna, yeah, anyway, I don't think we actually got enough of a clarity about what role she will have in the narrative. She's obviously an important character, but she's not part of the four dudes in the car. So what role she'll have seems to be a little bit of a mystery. We're still not sure even if, you know, she's an ally of a fairly menacing-looking Levitan or an enemy of it, a victim of it. So, you know, she could be the enemy in the end. She could be one of the supporting characters. I'm just not sure yet. So I think that that mystery that you're talking about will be kind of explored through that character.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much with her specifically. I mean, she's everything, right? Because the journey is to get to her. That's the impetus. That's what drives the entire narrative, is the escape from the kingdom and this journey to get to her. At the other side of the world, or whatever. So it'll be interesting to see kind of what develops.
Mm. But what she is going to be. Yeah, I think I'm really looking forward to seeing more about her. I think she'll be a more important character than a lot of people are assuming at the moment. I mean, one of the things that I have been following is there has been, you know, the same criticisms of Final Fantasy XV that there isn't the important female characters and all that kind of stuff. I think that she will be more important than people are expecting, despite not being playable.
Well, I mean, a lot of the information we've seen so far and a lot of the words we've had from, you know, the developers have always been to please keep an open mind and remember that just because this story we're creating, it's important that the main cast be all men because this is a bonding story between men. Women will still be fundamentally important to the story. So, I mean, we've seen Luna, and she's going to be a fascinating character. We've also seen glimpses of, like, her retainer or assistant. I forget her name, but we've been told she's an extremely important character as well who's going to grow throughout the story. One of the prior trailers that released a couple months ago that showed us that new stealth gameplay footage revealed the Dragoon character who's working for the bad guys, and she's kind of that classic tough. She looks awesome. So we're going to get a lot of interesting women in this story. Even if they may not be playable, it's clear that they're going to be integral to the plot.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess that's the main thing. I mean, as long as they're more interesting than some of the main four characters, I'll be happy. I think Prospero is going to annoy me.
I mean, Yosuke. He's Yosuke. Didn't you know that? It's going to be literally just Yosuke, and it's going to be hilarious. I'm going to sit there and be very, very confused.
Yeah, I'm not sold on him.
And then we have Auron. Then we have not Auron.
Well, the other three men are kind of cool for me. I'm happy with them. I just don't know about Prospero.
We've got Squall, we've got Yosuke, we've got not Auron, and we've got random other person who has a British accent.
Oh, he's great, though. He's great. He's the smart guy is always my favorite.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. One of the things I think might be interesting, from what I can see, is while these characters are all obviously important and there's going to be that bonding story, I think part of their role will also be to simply be an outlet to view the world itself within. I think we might be looking at something a little bit like Final Fantasy XII, in the sense that the main cast are almost they almost take a back seat at a lot of times to everything else that's happening. I think with the huge open world that Square Enix is building for this game, as long with the themes, the political themes that seem to be running over the top of the four main character stories, we could be in for something pretty epic that goes well beyond the actual story that we're experiencing, which goes back to that point, you know, why Square Enix is making these animes and films and all that kind of thing. It's the world that seems to be almost as important, if not more important, than what's actually in the Final Fantasy XV game itself.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very aware of the fact that it could be a 12-style game, and that it scares me and worries me a little bit. But because I think Noctis is more directly involved with the whole conflict, it might be a bit more relatable, I guess, rather than just this sort of background thing that you're not really involved in, but are still kind of there for.
I guess I'm just confused as to what exactly you're looking for in a JRPG in general these days, because there's you don't like 13 because it's far too linear.
Yep.
But you don't like 12 because it's open at the sacrifice of character development, but you can't have intense character 10. Development without a guided experience.
I just want 10 again. Is that so hard?
But then just go play 10 again.
I am playing 10 again.
Just don't buy a new JRPGs. Like, don't worry about it.
I've seriously been playing a 10 again. It's really scary. And I'm still playing Rogue Galaxy as well. So, like, I want that sort of, like, adventure game with, like, themes behind it rather than just, like, this open, like, blank slate sort of narrative, I guess is what I'd call it, where you're sort of left to interpret it yourself entirely rather than having, like, a bit of a prompt.
But that's not what FF12 was. FF12 was full of extremely important political commentary. FF13 was full of large amounts of commentary about the nature of human freedom, science fiction narratives. it just because you didn't recognize a theme doesn't mean these works aren't packed dense full of themes and narrative elements. They're there. You were just turned off by other elements, and then you chose not to investigate further.
I'll accept that. I didn't like the gameplay, so I didn't get involved with it, which is why I'm excited for 15, because its gameplay is not the worst.
Yeah, and that's fine. I'm just saying don't condemn an entire work or say it's thematically bereft just because you didn't enjoy certain aspects of it.
Yeah, I guess. It's just that I feel that games like X made it more... I'm not going to say... How do I say this? They made it more manageable, I guess.
Sure. Sure. I kind of know what you mean by that.
Yeah.
Okay, so to get back on Final Fantasy 15 before Alan and Chris kill each other, one other thing I'd like to mention, and this is just me going purely fanboy, but oh my god, the chocobos.
How good is the new music?
I know! And how good is it that the chocobos drift? I mean, that is just the coolest thing. Now I want a new racing game with Chocobo Drift, and they can call it Chocobo Drift. That would be like the best thing ever.
It has like techno music. And it's like what was that game called? There was a drifting game that came out recently, and it was like it's Outrun styled. It looks, I want that, but with Chocobos. I want like a drifting game with like neon lights and stuff like that.
Oh, like Drift Stage or one of those?
Yeah, Drift Stage, yeah.
Yeah, that would be just awesome.
I want that so much.
No, I guess seriously, I was worried that like this car thing was going to be like the only way to get around Final Fantasy 15. I knew that there would be chocobos somewhere. I just didn't think they'd play a particularly important role in the whole thing. And I am so happy to see that chocobos are back and apparently quite important to the way that you move around the space.
The car can't off-road, right?
Yeah, the car can't off-road. So.
That's why the chocobos are there. Yeah, chitty chitty bang bang moment at the end of the end of
the I mean, if Square Enix wanted to, they could have done away with chocobos and just had this car thing, where you fly, boat, whatever. It can be like a 007 gadget and do everything.
See, I was expecting them to call the car the chocobo model. Like, that's what I was expecting them to do.
Yeah,
like,
I was
call thinking, the car thing. Like, the chocobo model of cars.
Something lame like that would have worked, I guess, for what... I mean, if Square Enix wanted to, they could have done that. I think it's a nice nod to tradition that they've included these chocobos as a proper element for getting around. And now I just need to see Moogles and Biggs and Wedge, and they've done the trifecta. Oh, and Sid, of course.
Isn't Sid already in it?
Yeah, Sid is Sid. Yeah. The mechanic girl.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Girl Sid. No, that's pretty cool. All right, that one's fine. But we still need to see a Biggs and Wedge and a Moogle. I don't know how they'll fit Moogles into it, because they're a little bit more fantasy, I guess. Chocobos, you can see kind of existing in an alternate world that doesn't break with natural laws.
It makes sense. Moogles
are... Yeah, Moogles are a little bit more of a high fantasy kind of element, which I don't think this game is gunning for in terms of theme. So hopefully they find some way to get a Moogle in there somewhere, because it would be sad if there isn't. But, yeah.
I think it's workable with the Moogles. I mean, in the original conception of the Moogle, they were supposed to be cats. A cat-like creature, and that's kind of become obscured in the way the art's evolved over the years. But, like, before Koopa was a thing, in the original Japanese games, Moogle said, yeah, N-Y-A, which is, like, the cat sound in Japan, right? So, like, Moogles could easily fit into FF15, at least... perhaps not speaking and like talking to the characters, but if there's white cats with little purple bat wings, those are your Moogles. Like they can be in there, certainly.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, they've managed to get all the summons in there. I mean, if you've got carbuncles and stuff running around, there's no reason you can't have a Moogle.
Yeah, and the carbuncles can text you, apparently, so...
And they can send emojis! Yay! I want a carbuncle app on my phone now that just sends me an emoji every so often, just being like, yay! I want that so badly. Oh, it's so cute. I can't handle it. Help me.
All right, I think that's good. We'll get Ellen some help, and we'll come back after a break. Welcome back again. That's another track from Knights of Azure. Once again, go play it while you're waiting for Final Fantasy XV. So, for the last segment today, I thought we'd have a quick chat about, I guess, get a little bit more in-depth into the kind of mechanics of the Final Fantasy XV game as we've experienced across both demos so far. I haven't played the new one, Platinum, as I said earlier. I have played the original demo, which came with the Final Fantasy Type Zero retail game, and I found it fast and very active. I think it's the kind of thing that Square Enix needed to do to reach that 10 million sales mark that they're looking at. You couldn't really do a turn-based game and have that kind of mass appeal. I think the action sequences, from what I've played of that original demo, will quite strongly resonate with people. Whether there's the kind of the depth of the systems remains to be seen, I guess, but you can't really tell that from a demo. But I know Chris has got some pretty strong opinions based on both demos, so I will sit back and let him rant.
Yeah, this is something I've spent quite a bit of time thinking about. In the previous segment, I kind of mentioned that I disagree with the more common comparison these days, that these games feel, that 15's feeling a bit like Kingdom Hearts, which is not something I agree with. My main thing, and I'll try to stick with things that are kind of shared by both demos, so I won't go into like the team attacks and the warping as much, and the different weapon use. But the biggest thing I think that stands out to me about the way combat's shaping up in FF15 is I actually do think it's turn-based. I think what they've managed to actually do is create a system that feels active but incorporates a lot of the timing and decision-making principles that were important to the old active time battle system and tear it out of a system wherein battle sequences are necessary. It's a nitpicky little thing, but one of the things that always stood out to me in the FF15 combat that we've experienced so far in the demos is attacking tied to the circle button is not a combo. You're not pressing circle 5 times to execute a 5-hit combo. It's very illustrative to me that you're holding circle, and as long as you are holding circle, attacks are playing out. the combat kind of plays out as a game where you're gauging timing and observing enemy animations to switch between holding square for defense and circle for attack. And what ends up happening is, even though these things are happening actively and it feels like an action game, this game of timing becomes a turn-based structure because you're actually waffling back and forth between attack and defense based on the timing that you observe in the game. And there's subtle nods to the fact that the combat is sequence-based. If you play the episode Duske demo, the enemies, the way they load in off-screen from off-screen and come running over, it's almost like classic battle sequences, but without the silly glass shattering or screen tearing effects to indicate. It's just a seamless version of the classic battle sequence. So I don't think 15 is as active as we all really think it is. I think it's actually just brilliant design applying the principles of turn-based combat to a more seamless open world. And that's kind of my piece on that.
I mean, I know where you're coming from, and I do think it's a strategic action system. To me, it feels a little bit like some of those MOBAs that we're playing at the moment where, you know, you are auto-attacking unless you decide to do kind of something else. And there is a very high level of strategy involved with that. I guess for me, I don't know, I have always liked in my RPGs where I kind of can sit back and actually think while I'm playing, and I don't get along with action quite as well. Saying that, you know, it doesn't stop me from playing a whole lot of action-based RPGs, but as a general comment about the Final Fantasy series, I've wanted a return to, I guess, the Final Fantasy X and before, you know, ATB systems for a while now. So I'm just certainly not dismissing Final Fantasy XV's combat system, and I think it's going to be a good one, and I think it's going to be a popular one. I think it will resonate with a lot of players. I just keep hoping that the next one after this will be a slightly slower one, because you know, Final Fantasy XIV is obviously an MMO, so it has an action combat system. Final Fantasy Type Zero had a very fast action system itself, so it'd just be nice for Square Enix to go back to tradition in 16 and beyond, or at some point anyway, with something a little bit more turn-based. Okay. So I think that pretty much wraps up our immediate thoughts about Final Fantasy XV. I'm sure this is a game that we're going to keep coming back to over and over again, because it's not actually released until September. So we do have a little while to wait, and I'm sure we're going to find out an awful lot more about the game in the meantime. You know, we've got E3 coming up, and I'm sure there's going to be a big deal about it there. So stay tuned for more, but in the meantime, let's wrap it for this week. Thank you very much for listening, as always. You can get us on our social medias and always leave us comments and things if you'd like us to address certain things in our podcast. Just let us know, and we will certainly have a chat about it. Thank you very much for listening, and have a good one.
Catch you guys.
Take care.
Digitally uploaded.